Do we have other questions or comments?
Is there any research going into what happens if government subsidies disappear and all of a sudden it's no longer profitable for all these private enterprises to be involved? Seems to be a lot of write-ups nationally today about the fact that the only reason wind companies are in wind companies is because government subsidies make it profitable. And the second those government subsidies go away, it's not profitable to be in that business anymore.
I think there's a ton of truth to that, conceptually. When we did sit down and talk with some private developers a couple of years ago to learn the business and understand it, they said, you're not going to do it because it's some economic windfall. You know, you're not going to generate power for half the cost that you're paying now. It just isn't going to happen. But you can make this shift off fossil fuels. You can reduce your carbon footprint. You can make these moves because of the tax plays that are there. And when I said earlier that, you know, it's a critical piece of creating the generating entity, it truly is. But under today's program, and they're in place for at least the next 5 years, the accelerated depreciation schedules, the tax credit schedules, they are in play and they are in place, and it would be something very unusual to undo that in the next 5 year window.
And once you're in. It's not going to be extracted. It's not going to be pulled back again, even if the laws change or expire. The other thing I would add is that there are no fossil fuels that I know of that don't receive subsidies. So renewable energy is the same.
One piece of the market that's developing is the renewable energy credit market, which is a whole separate commodity-based value of alternate sources. It's not tax credits. It's not tax. It's got nothing to do with taxes, but it is a requirement of these competitive energy suppliers to have in their portfolios a certain percentage of renewable energy resources, whether they're biomass, wind, solar, hydro, whatever. And the shift that they are forced to go through in changing their portfolio from carbon-based fuels to non-carbon-based fuels create this market. It's almost a reverse of a cap-and-trade setup. And that private market driver and the development and maturing of that renewable energy credit market is, in theory, going to offset some of the tax programs so that it's still attractive to develop, it's still attractive to go forward, but with a commodity market driver and not a tax driver. We'll see if that turns out.
You started out saying that it has to be a private entity, and that's because of being able to get a hold of all of those tax credits. But you made comment there about the Fox Island Electric Co-op, which is, as I understood, more of a municipal public entity.
The electric utility on North Haven and Vinyl Haven is not CMP. It's not Vinegar Hydro. It's the Fox Island Electric Co-op. They are a nonprofit cooperative, and they are the distributor of power on the two islands. They have an arrangement with the owners of Fox Island Wind LLC to take the output and to be their electric utility and to assist the generation entity in distributing and providing the gateway and the bridge to the grid. And there's a very simple in concept but very complicated legal arrangement between the Fox Island Electric Co-op and the generating entity that, in essence, the owner of the three turbines on Vinyl Haven is a silent partner, sitting in the back room collecting tax benefits. And the co-op runs it, manages it, operates it as if it was their own. Because someday it will be. That transfer will happen.
That's like 20 years down the road.
Way down the road.
Yeah. Now, in their instance out there, their setup, who is the one that bought the land that those turbines sit on? Or was that donated, or what?
No, the generating entity, Fox Island Wind LLC, as I understand it, is the owner of the property, the real estate, that the turbines sit on. And they purchased that.
Okay, but they purchased it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you know, I look at this map that was provided to us, and it seems that a lot of this is in easements or conservation groups such as the Coastal Mountain Land Trust. A little of it is owned by Camden. How would, do you have a feel for how this entity, whatever the corporate entity that's established, would go about getting title to the land so they could build their windmill, their turbines up on there?
Ragged Mountain specifically?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there are a number of hurdles for this project to address. Real estate is a big piece of that. There are not hundreds, but there are dozens of property owners on the mountain. Issues of access, issues of ownership are all very important. The Coastal Mountain Land Trust has limitations on the properties that they own as to what can be done with them. Other private property owners may have similar restrictions or opposition to the project, and that may end the thing all by itself. Access to the ridgeline will neither be easy or inexpensive. It's doable, but it needs to fall in place, and to the extent that's an economic discussion, it's also a big piece of the feasibility stage. What the Town of Camden Energy Committee did in this recommendation to our select board to reach out to Rockport and Hope is to recognize that this isn't a Town of Camden discussion by itself. And you need a committee of all three communities, because the section of Gillette Road that's more likely, that where the ridgeline comes down and meets the first public road, is in the Town of Hope. So those three towns need representation, need voices, need discussion, and it isn't a discussion that the Town of Camden's Energy Committee felt comfortable having unilaterally. So that's exactly why this recommendation is in front of you right now, because the project's out in public discussion, and it's a bigger discussion than the Town of Camden.